Hello, friends.
Welcome to another edition of No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher. I am a senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Joining me as always, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, it is my man, your man, everyone's man, Dan Devine. What's up?
Jake, are you a camping guy? Like, are you an outdoorsman?
I do enjoy camping. I actually just last night asked the lady friend, because she just got back from a bachelorette party at Joshua Tree, and said, we need to go to Joshua Tree. I said, would you camp there with me? Because they were staying at some like ex-movie star's Airbnb house. A little bit different of experience.
Yeah, that's not exactly camping.
Yeah, I like to camp. It's not a routine hobby of mine. Why do you ask?
As you might, it might come to surprise you, having gotten to know me a little bit, that this is not my area of expertise. It's not something I've literally ever done. Yeah, but not even like, I'm not like, it wasn't like a Lower East Side, you know, kid. I wasn't like in Kids or anything like that. But I've literally never done it. The older one, the 9-year-old, wanted to join Scouts. My wife, who did grow up being very, you know, more camping and outdoors, she was like, yes, this is fantastic. And she signed up for the camping trip. And then she's like, oh, I have a wedding that weekend, so you got to take her. And so you asked me how I'm doing. I'm terrified.
What is this weekend?
This is this weekend. This is Saturday to Monday. And I have, so
it's like a 2-day camping trip.
Yeah, dog. And the little one wants to come too. So I am going from never in 41 years doing this to doing it for the first time with two kids, being the only one responsible for them. So if I get yellow jackets out there, listeners, any of the NC Army to be paying attention to this, you need to be looking, you know, Jake will have my coordinates. He'll have a way to get a hold of me, okay, or at least to know where I last was. So please just keep a good thought for your boy. Keep a prayer in your heart and a song on the wind for Dan. And then maybe next week I'll come back. You know, maybe I come back next week a completely different guy. Maybe I'm like super into it. And then we roll into the NBA season and I have lots of outdoorsy wisdom about what each of these teams need to do and how they need to like make fires and roast s'mores or whatever. You don't roast s'mores, right?
Yeah, why not? Little fire, little burn, a little toast. People like it brown on the outside. Get a little melty. Right.
It's a good tip. I'll try to make sure that I'm doing that. Not turning like pitch black. All right, good. Good stuff.
My hope for you is that you get to a place where all the kids are asleep and you have a moment alone outside. You look up at the stars and you recognize just how insignificant we all are, in particularly you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, Jake, I don't need the outdoors to remember how insignificant I am. I have a lot of therapy that I go through to try to work through that thought anyway, but I appreciate the thought. Preseason basketball, speaking of insignificant, yeah,
you're the one who got us off the rails immediately.
Well,
the
I was like, this feels like a good cold open kind of discussion.
It is. The preseason is a great opportunity for us all to get back on the rails, to ease the machine, to grease the wheels, to get back in the flow of things. I believe the first game is happening like right now in Abu Dhabi, if I'm correct.
Yeah, maybe I think it tipped off at noon. We're recording this 12:25 Eastern. So yeah, it's probably a rollicking affair in the first quarter.
I mean, I haven't paid too much attention. I'm trying to be as not on social media as I can right now. All the pics of Minnesota and Dallas people hanging out in the desert playing Xbox, holding like, I thought like a massive like sparrow or something on some front office guy's Instagram.
Massive sparrow?
Like, I don't know what this bird was. Like, this seems like as a world traveler myself,
this
seems like a very cool opportunity. And I hope it's a bonding experience that all these teams are hoping it is, and not a really long stretch before a really long stretch of 82 games where these teams are going to get back and want to never see each other again. So,
well, last year you were the people's insider. This year you're the massive sparrow. All right, let's go.
On that note, James Harden has come back and is seeing Daryl Morey and the 76ers again. The sparrow has landed. We didn't really expect this, I think, because Daryl's kind of said this on Media Day for my conversations. I'm not necessarily sure as of Monday morning or Sunday night, whenever Harden and his people decided for him not to show up to Media Day. I don't think there was like a 17-step plan or being orchestrated at that point. I think this has very much been kind of like a touch and go, we're going to reevaluate things type situation. I got a text from someone on Monday afternoon, I want to say, because he showed up Tuesday, whatever. It was the day before, saying like Harden just told his trainer that he's going to Colorado. And I was like, okay, like, what does that really mean? And then, like, sure enough, the next day. So that was my fault for not taking that tip as super seriously as I should have. But all that being said, and all these little updates of, like, he's not there, is he there, what will he do today, like, oh, the practice went well, like, this dude's making $37 million to play basketball this season. I think ultimately all I really care about is just that. Like, will he eventually, when October 26 comes around, when I fly to Milwaukee to watch Dame and his season opener play whatever the hell the Sixers team is going to look like, is he going to be on the team and like immersed in that culture and trying to compete for a championship or not? Every little update along the way, now that he's reported, like, I don't think that the talks are close between these two teams. Like, depending on who you have a conversation with, they'll say, well, isn't that close? Like, if they're one first round pick away, isn't that close? I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that's exactly what it is. Different people would look at different lengths and different, you know, gaps between getting a deal done. So some people would say a first round pick apart, for example, is a hell of a lot.
Yeah, pretty other significant people, gap, right?
Other people would say, no, snap your fingers and throw that bad boy in. But I'm sitting here on Thursday, a little bit afternoon, while the Mavericks and the Timberwolves are tipping off in Abu Dhabi, talking to you through a computer, saying, I've kind of reached the point where, all right, this trade's going to happen sometime in the next 3 weeks, or it's not going to happen until some team, either the Clippers or who else, gets into the regular season and is like, God damn, we're not that good as we thought we were. This is a wide open title race. James Harden is theoretically available. The Sixers don't want too much. They just want more than, you know, whatever the expiring contract and then some poo-poo platter the Clippers have offered. Let's just beat that and get it done. For now, I'm kind of done. Kind of over the James Harden storyline. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have... I think you're right to say the him showing up and not setting something on fire as soon as he got there, I guess that is tantamount to progress, and I guess that's tantamount to a notable newsworthy development. And now we have to see where now we wait and see, you know, like, at what point does this spiral or does something meaningful coalesce there? Like, maybe things get better. You know, you're asking me to be optimistic as I consider the possibility of camping with my children. Maybe something gets better. Who knows?
Yeah. The Sixers, not to interrupt you, the Sixers have maintained all along this is salvageable. They can be optimistic. They can go camping together under the stars and feel so insignificant that they'll get past their drama and march in lockstep on the way to a parade down Broad Street.
Where they will be led, ideally, by one Joel Embiid, who moments before we started recording the podcast today, broke, you know, there was a little bit of news broken about him. Would you like to take us through that?
The segue protege is becoming the master.
There we go.
Yeah. Embiid, apparently, according to The Athletic, hand-delivered, however you do that, a message to Grant Hill.
It takes a massive sparrow, and then that goes with in its beak.
The Sixers, they're in Colorado Springs, which is the home of Team USA, and Colorado State University, the Rams. Go Rams! Where the Sixers are having training camp, so the timing is convenient. Maybe that's the big conspiracy here. I saw Sam Amick at The Athletic put a really nice article together about, like, how the Sixers got there and they needed permission from Denver. Maybe this was a whole scheme all along just for Joel to be on Grant Hill's front doorstep. But no, it's been, I mean, it was definitely a huge talking point of the FIBA World Cup in Manila when I was out there, that the front court deficiencies of Team USA were clearly at the forefront of all the weaknesses that did come up and rear their ugly heads as Team USA went into the knockout round. What better way to fill that gap, to fill that hole, than with a 7'2", 280-pound reigning MVP? It's a massive win for Grant Hill and Team USA, who, I mean, Team USA in this era, being piloted by Grant, it's kind of been the most, like, free agency that we've ever seen, like NBA free agency that we've ever seen. Paolo Banchero gave a commitment to Italy and then, I mean, a verbal commitment, and then backed out and joined Team USA. that dude might not even be able to play on this loaded team. He's probably not going to be able to play on this loaded Team USA team that already has commitments from LeBron and KD and Steph and Devin Booker, and there's going to be more. Like, did Grant Hill just get another coup where now Embiid is starting and Paolo Banchero can't play for Italy, which, you know, made the quarterfinals of the World Cup that lost to Team USA? Could have used a Paolo Banchero on that team without Danilo Gallinari with a torn ACL. So, yeah, the Americans have been kind of cleaning up in this international free agency sweepstakes of late.
And yeah, boy. So you mentioned Embiid coming. You know, that's at the one nice or one of the nice things about Embiid deciding he wants to play for the U.S. is that also means he's not going to play for France, right? So France, obviously, Rudy Gobert has been a linchpin of that program for forever. They're expecting to have Victor Wembanyama next summer, but knowing that you don't have another elite, dominant offensive big man, dominant rebounder that you got to deal with is, you know, that's a nice bonus in addition to, as you said, plugging in those holes of just interior defense, rim protection, defensive rebounding, things that were all glaring weak points as the U.S. lost to Lithuania, lost to Germany, lost to Canada. Like these were things where it goes beyond just walling off dribble penetration. It's also what happens when you actually force a miss. Can you get it go the other way? And the interesting thing I saw after the initial report, Anthony Chang of the Miami Herald said, or reported that Bam Adebayo had said he has already got an invitation or, you know, to play for Team USA too. So if you go into the next Olympics with Embiid and Bam, I would imagine Embiid starts there because he's the one with the MVP, but Bam's also the one that has won a gold medal with Team USA. So however that shakes out, that would figure to to solve those problems pretty aggressively. It also is kind of interesting because Draymond Green had been talking about the possibility of going back to the well there. Steph is going for the first time. Steve Kerr is going to be the head coach. Draymond's won two gold medals. Like, if does having two centers, like full, you know, like only centers on the team mitigate the need for Draymond, or does Draymond go as like insurance? You know, how the roster shakes out from there is kind of interesting to me. But yeah, to look at it and say, the major shift from the Colangelo era of like, you need a multi-year commitment, that's what we have to have, to listen, if you're willing to come for as long as we can get you, we'll take what we can get. Yeah. It didn't work out so well in the World Cups, but it seems like it's shaping up very nicely for Team USA at the Olympics.
Yeah, that was kind of a key talking point and theme of the World Cup. Steve Kerr kept mentioning over and over again how the 5-6 week stretch that it takes to bring together a team compared to the 3-year cycles that, I mean, the 10-year cycle, some of these, I mean, Finland was not a force in this tournament, for example, but like Larry Markkanen's playing with dudes that he grew up with.
He's right.
Luka Doncic is playing with his friends from 8th grade, you know? So the familiarity there is something that the Americans will never have if they choose to not operate the program that way. I was talking to an agent yesterday who has primarily European clients, like European placed American born clients. He was saying to me that it's not really about the talent. Like the team that USA sent out there was talented enough to win the World Cup in Manila. They're obviously going to have the talent in this 2024 crop. It's really just about the style of play. It's just a different element, and that spread high pick and roll, the formulaic nature of the NBA, which is something that I wonder is like a bit of a grander issue. Maybe it's a topic for another podcast, but the fact that pretty much most teams are just running spread pick and roll, and you're either throwing it to the roll man or kicking it to the weak side corner, and it's just not that much different on most positions. Sure, there's a ton. People are going to be crying that I'm not an X's and O's guy, but you're getting my general theme here.
Yeah, there's variation within each possession. There's a lot of different actions and things that spring out of that, but the setup is often looks very similar. And then it's about where, you know, so if a defense or a country knows this is generally what they want to do. And also they haven't had a whole lot of time to put in a playbook with a lot of wrinkles to it and a lot of time to develop the familiarity of counters off of it or whatever. It might make you a little bit easier to defend, even if you've got that top end talent.
Yeah. So they're going to have it. It's just a matter of coalescing all together and making it work. It's going to be interesting to put Embiid on the fold now. Does that, like, do other people start forming to, like, does someone take some brief citizenship where, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is playing for Jordan. Like,
right.
Is someone going to reclassify or whatever and try to gear up and come and get Team USA just like NBA free agency really does happen? Probably not, but it would be a fun wrinkle. And Embiid kind of being like the traitor of France in the Paris Olympics is an interesting heel-like storyline for Troell Embiid to kind of have a little undercurrent, a little subplot of the Olympics that, you know, to me, I'm always about basketball, the NBA becoming as much like the WWE as possible. So let's make this happen. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, that definitely what we need is Joel Embiid doing that Degeneration X crotch chops at the Olympics.
Oh,
you
yeah. know, at Rudy Gobert.
If you can
do Victor Wembanyama.
If you can do it on the metal stand so much.
After he's cracked him into the hardwood from the top rope. Okay.
Yeah, if you can do it on the metal stand so much, the better. But speaking of Victor Wembanyama, we had one, I think one more item. There we go. Look at us, tag team champs over here.
There you go. Devin Vassell signed a 5-year, $146 million early bird rookie contract extension with San Antonio earlier this week. Right after, a year after the Spurs signing Keldon Johnson to a 4-year, $80 million extension, kind of set the marketplace. Like once Keldon Johnson got 480, which is actually like 474 with some incentives mixed in.
Yeah.
But 480 was the number. That was the benchmark number mentioned for all these dudes, for Grant Williams, for Sadiq Bey, for, you know, go down the line. So welcome to your new benchmark that any young wing player is going to want. So OG Anunoby, for example, different stratosphere of contract or different echelon, whatever the word is. He's not off his rookie deal right now. He's going off for his third contract, but he has either indicated to Toronto or made it clear or Toronto offered it, whatever the case may be. I know Mark Stein reported it. I've heard it as well. OG Anunoby has no plans to sign the 4-year 117 extension that he's eligible for with Toronto this season. I'd have to think 5-year 146 for Devin Vassell is going to be at least in the context minds of his new representation at CAA. So from him to everyone else, I mean, I will say overall, haven't talked about this with too many people, but it just come up every now and then. Because when a deal comes through, you got these cap nerds sometimes who just text you when every contract gets announced and they say, hey, what do you think of the deal? And it's great. Fodder for fun chatting and whatnot, but like I don't have too many takes off of this. It's October 4th, 5th, and he's a player that the Spurs have really loved for a long time. They think of him as potential standard bearer, to use a Dan Devine common phrase.
I know I use it too much. I gotta chill out with that.
We all have our little bugaboos. I used to write ultimately all the time. Took it out. Hated it. So I don't necessarily have scorching hot opinions on this deal, but I will say the majority of feedback I received was that this is a pretty team-friendly contract and good to the Spurs for locking him up at that length, at that number. It just, there's a generally interesting dynamic right now. We saw it with DeJounte Murray take his extension with Atlanta that a lot of people that I talked to kind of like stuck out or put up their nose to and thought it was a little bit of an early shot from Atlanta, from DeJounte, where he could have gotten more, but the money's just getting so damn big, man. I think we're going to, I mean, as long, if you're not Giannis who can hold out a year and get $70 million more dollars,
right?
A lot of guys are going to be taking the guaranteed 146. Like there was one agent who I was talking to, it just came up. He was kind of killing the Vassell deal. And I said, you know what, man, at the end of the day, I can't blame any representation or any player for taking a guaranteed $146 million. So shout out to the young man from Florida State.
Yeah, it's a giant deal. It's generational money for him. And it's, you know, this is the paradox that we're sitting in right now in terms of the economy of the NBA is it is a massive, massive contract that is also, because it's front loaded, and this was that came from, I think, Bobby Marks at ESPN, where the structure is that it's going to be the highest in year one, then dip down to $27 million in the second year, down even further than that in the third year, which would be when I believe Wembanyama is eligible for an extension. So by the fourth and fifth years of the deal, you're looking at like 15% of the salary cap, because the cap numbers are just going to keep going up. So what looks like what would have been the far and away the biggest contract in the league, like, you know, a handful of years ago, is now going to be, by the time Devin Vassell gets into his prime, like Buddy Hield, Joe Harris money. Like, and so it's hard to get your head around that. It feels like that shouldn't be true, to say a $146 million contract, which I think there was like $11 million in incentives there, but still, like, $135 million, take the haircut. Even to say that, like, that might wind up being like a cost-conscious, reasonable bargain feels crazy. It's like, it blows your mind, but this is where you're going. And at this point, like, if you're getting a guy that you think can be a foundational piece on a sub max deal, it's almost like definitionally fine, which maybe that's sort of not a nuanced enough answer. I'm not a cap guy in that way either, but, you know, like, the best players from that draft class, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, those guys are getting the max. They're getting the full max with all the, you know, cherries on top. Devin Vassell's not that, but he's also a guy that was, I think, like 18.5, 4-4 last season, really good spot up shooter. Like, I wrote early last season, like, there was like a squint and you can see Paul George component to his game. That's obviously like the high end optimistic look on what he could be. But this is, if there is even a scintilla of a chance of that being true, locking it in at whatever price it costs now is going to look, you know, fantastic later. So they like the idea of him as a potential complementary player next to Vic, maybe as a number two scorer. If he's Chris Middleton, the deal is perfect, right? Like, that's obviously another high-end comp, but if he gets to that level, then, you know, you're not going to be thinking about the money by the time you're 3 years on the line. You're going to be thinking about, is he good enough to be the number two on a team that can win a couple of playoff series?
Yeah, the cap's going to be going up 10% max increases year over year for the length of this new CBA. So it can't go up anymore. There isn't going to be some big 2016 again where Kevin Durant goes to Golden State. That's not happening. But the money's going up. It's going up. It's going up. And I really do think we're going to keep seeing more extensions, especially for younger guys. For younger guys to get off their rookie deal. By comparison, like, a really good rookie deal, a really good top first, like, a lottery pick contract, you're getting something in the 4 year, $40 million range, which for a lot of these guys who are obviously going as freshmen, for a 19-year-old to sign a 4 year, $40 million contract in that ballpark, even something, you know, 420, that's obviously crazy money. But to come off that deal before it even expires with 5 years, 150,
right?
It's pretty nice. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, so locking that in, like, you get whatever that is, like $200 and $175 million worth of salary before you're even like 25. That's, you know, not bad work if you can get it. And then, you know, the Spurs are excited about what they think he can be. And, you know, we'll find out if the other pieces that go into that roster, the other young guys they've got, can develop around Vic. I mean, they're going to be fascinating to watch, even if they lose a bunch of games.
All right, that does it for our news section. We're going to come back after this with some alternative over-unders. We're not doing win totals. We're not doing someone's points per game. We got some different ideas that some of us don't even know are coming. So stay tuned. That'll be next. Welcome back to No Cap Room. We're trying to think of some fun, silly, alternative ways to get into the spirit of the regular season. And we came up with a nice little way, these alternative over-unders, to just bounce around the league, hit some topics, have some fun. Dan came up with some. I came up with some. I believe Dan came up with way more than me. It was his idea. So I default and deflect in that regard. But
deflect responsibility,
out,
heap blame over where it belongs.
I'm hosting, man. It's too much work. I can't be hosting and coming up with the questions and doing this and doing that. So, with all that being said, I can't ask us these questions. We're going to let our super producer, John Gennaro, run this one. Take it away, sir.
Hey, guys. My favorite thing, it's going well. My favorite thing is that even though Dan came up with three times as many as Jake, you guys had two that were almost identical.
It's just right in the same
stream with each other. So let's start with one of those, because it's a topic we talked about earlier in the podcast, and that is James Harden. I will give you the way that Jake phrased it and then the way that Dan phrased it. Okay. Jake put an over-under on October 26th for James Harden to get traded. Now, October 26th is the first Sixers regular season game of the season, hilariously at Milwaukee to play Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. So he's basically saying James Harden will get traded before or after the start of the season. That's his over-under. Dan phrased it as games James Harden will play for the Philadelphia 76ers, which could be a little different. Technically, James Harden could just sit out or whatever. And his over-under is 0.5. So his question is, will James Harden play any games for the Philadelphia 76ers this season? So, Jake, since you have less of these, I'll let you go first. Are you taking the over, I think, which in this case would mean James Harden plays at least one game for the Philadelphia 76ers, or the under, meaning that he gets traded before the start of the season, or I guess just sits out?
So the way I phrased it on that day, because people around the league, particularly people around this situation, have said deadlines spark action. We saw it with Portland. Sure. There are people involved who definitely thought training camp and media day was going to be a deadline for James. Didn't happen. So I'm not necessarily looking, as we kind of alluded to at the top, I'm not necessarily looking at October 26th as the deadline that I believe other people might. But because that is a thing in the ether, that was why I looked at it that way. But when I look at it with Dan's numbers, because over October 26th, to me, I'm taking that. I think he will be on the team. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, when Dan started saying numbers, now it's interesting to me, like, how many games? Is he going all the way to February? Is it going to be December? I don't know. I'm smashing the over 0.5 if it's over October 26th, because if we do get to him playing into the season, most teams like to look at things in a 10 to 15 game sample size. So I'd be surprised, unless there's like, you know, I'm knocking on wood of my mobile desk here, unless there's like an Aaron Rodgers type moment that shocks the league, shocks the world.
Sure.
I'm not really, I think we could be in for a long haul here, because everything that people have said throughout the, you know, entire eternity of Daryl Morey's tenure as being Dork Elvis and working the analytics and thinking a little bit outside the box. One consistent characteristic is that he draws his line in the sand, he digs his heels in, and he doesn't break. That's what he did with Ben. When all these people, myself included, said, there's not getting a better offer. Take this deal, take that deal. They have a standard. They need at least, they need exactly the package that they would have needed to go get Drew Holiday in order to trade James Harden. That's basically what it is. Until that comes, I don't think the Clippers have any reason to do that, because there's no one else, to my knowledge, that's trying to go get him. It's even more of a Miami-Portland Dames like standoff situation to me. Right. Not like super contentious by all accounts, but like until there's some Milwaukee or Toronto sneaking in here, I'm taking the over on both.
Yeah, I think so. The reason I thought about it in terms of games played was because of the Ben Simmons situation that you mentioned. Like, he remained on the Sixers roster through the start of the season, but didn't play a single game for them. And
I'm Tony Reale dinging your points because you said something similar but further than what I said.
There you go. I appreciate that. And I think so. I think if I was to, if we were going to try to like sort of thread the needle here, I think I would take the over on the date and say that I can see this carrying into the season for the same reasons you mentioned, as far as the way Daryl Morey views this. And also from the perspective, like if James Harden doesn't want to play, he's not going to suit up. But I might thread the needle and say over on the date, under on the games. I could absolutely see it where he never actually suits up and takes the court for him. And as you mentioned, finding the off ramp here is pretty hard. Yes, he skipped media day. Yes, he reported to camp. As you mentioned, Sam Amick had the story where, quote, a source told him zero intentions of Harden rejoining the team in earnest. So I don't know if he's going to rejoin them ironically, sarcastically, in what capacity.
Which, I believe we've said that on the show in like mid-July before we took off. That's right, kind of been it, the expectation all along that if he does come back, he's going to be wearing the fat suit and whatever, whatever, whatever. But he's not wearing the fat suit right now.
He's
looking good. He's looking trim. People are commenting. People on the league are like, he's looking hot. He's looking skinny.
And Nick Nurse telling reporters that when Harden was there, like he was in just about everything throughout practice. He actually showed up and did stuff. Following that, Ira Winderman at the Sun Sentinel saying that the Heat are not the next, you know, not going to be next up for him. They, according to a source familiar with their thinking, he's not what's next up in their view. So then if that's the case, and if the Clippers continue to stay mum on this, where is the, you know, mystery team coming in from? It's hard to find one. Kind of feel like if there was one, we might have seen it over the last 3 months. Barring an injury, barring something dramatic shifting, it's hard to see where it comes from. So I think, yeah, that's where I would peg probably. I think I would take the under on games. I don't think he's going to get on the court for them because I don't think the relationship's going to meaningfully improve in that way, but it might take a little while on the date.
Okay. I will take back over. Maybe shorter answers going forward. this is one that you guys both had listed, but you had different numbers associated with it. So okay. I'm going to take control here. Jake, you asked Luka Doncic technical fouls over under 17.5. Dan, you had the same thing, but your number was 15.5. So I'm going to put the number at 16.5, and you guys get to pick, is Luka Doncic going to have more than 16.5 technical fouls this season or less? Jake, go ahead.
Well, I'm guessing that Dan put his number at the limit for when you get suspended. My number was based off of the fact that he's gone over that limit each of the last 3 years, and he's done 17, 18, and 17 in some order of the last 3 years. I looked, I did my research, I did my homework, Dan Devine.
Thank you.
It was also, I mean, it was a theme at the World Cup. He got tossed out of the Canada game. He was yelling around, and even in the even in his post-game press conference after getting kicked out of the Canada game, when he was saying, it's something I need to work on, he was saying, it's also not fair. So, I mean, this is a crucial year for Dallas. Everyone will be willing to put Luka on the next superstar to ask out, you know, whatever. So he can do himself and all of Dallas a favor by not having to miss games and also not like getting taken out of moments by screaming at the ref and complaining and whining and not getting back on defense and all that stuff. So I'm curious if he backs up his word and says he's actually going to be improving upon it. I'm taking the over. He hasn't done it yet. He hasn't done it in the last couple of years. And sometimes I think for these guys, it's just fun to yell and scream because you're a superstar and it's not going your way. So I don't think that's going to change. I'm taking the over.
Sometimes you project things and you like, it's like see the change that you want for yourself. So I'm going to go under as somebody who is defensive and knows it, but also doesn't work on it. And fix himself. I'm going to say I see the potential for Luka to make strides here, and I want that for him. You're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, you get suspended on your 16th tech, and then you get suspended after every two you keep getting. He's been in the position of like needing to get them rescinded to not get multiple suspensions, and constantly talks about how it needs to stop. If it does, I mean, the point where like everything revolves around him, even with Kyrie Irving in the door, everything revolves around him, and you know, whatever. Leadership attitude reflects leadership in an organization, on a team. If Dallas wants to be serious in the ways that they think that they can be, and the moves they've made suggest they believe they can be, Luka has to lead that charge, and he's got to, you know, chill out a little bit. And I want that for him and for them. So I'm going to go under, and I'm going to, you know, this is the offseason. Hope springs eternal. Let's go with that.
It's the preseason, by the way. It's the preseason.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's the preseason. Damn it. All right.
Let's get into some actual basketball over unders. These are all from Dan.
All right. No.
Jake has one left. It's not really basketball related. I'm saving it.
It's not basketball related at all.
No, but it's going to be great. All right. Combined field goal attempts per game for Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma. Dan sets the line.
That is a fun one.
Dan sets the line at 39.5.
Oh, I'm hammering the over.
All right, Jake, hammer the
I'm
over.
Hammering the over. Who else is going to shoot a basketball on that team?
Oh, so it's the Jordan Crawford Memorial. Who else going to shoot in Washington?
Not to be dismissive of the rest of the Washington roster, but those two guys.
But
like
also,
to get
who
up.
Else do you want taking shots on the Wizards roster?
Those two guys like to get him up. So, No, I think I'm very bullish on Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma. But, I mean, I wrote a big thing on Poole last year. I'll just say it. I'm trying to write another. I think he's very talented. I really like the way he's handled all the media exposure so far. But, yeah, like, for this team to be competitive, they need to get up shots, because I don't think this is going to be a team that's locked down defensively. So, yeah, I think they're going to be – I think the Wizards are going to be a really fun league pass team with a lot of games in the 140s that there's not a lot of defense being played. And those guys are chucking them. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the over is the move for me. The research on this one, Kuzma averaged 17.8 shots per game, field goal attempts per game last season. Poole in as a starter, 18.5. So 39.5 is a jump. But as you said, the infrastructure, it's not like Kuzma's going to be sharing the ball with Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis and whatever as they go. Like, there will be more opportunities for more shots as they go. Asked at Media Day, this is like one of the only things from Media Day that I actually liked. Asked at Media Day how green his light is this season, Poole's reply was, as green as DC, which I believe is a reference to parks and trees, but maybe, you know, I don't know. As green as DC, maybe other trees. I like it. Coach is giving me the opportunity to be me, to play freely. And while I don't think that Jordan Poole's necessarily a ball hog, like he came up in the Warriors system, had to learn that, like, get off the ball to get it back.
This dude averaged over 4 assists per game each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, 6 per 36. Like, he's a guy that where he will move the ball, but they also bring in Tyus Jones, who's like Mr. Set the table, move the ball, set the other guys up to shoot. And I think that in that dynamic, Jordan Poole is going to get a lot of opportunities to get him up, and Kyle Kuzma will as well. So, yeah, slam the over, more than 40 shots a game for those two guys, and, you know, let God sort them out.
I'm giving a quick adjacent line. Last year, career high 7.8 3-point attempts for Jordan Poole. Well over 10.
Yeah,
it's going to be over 10.
You know, the ceiling is the roof there. It's going way up.
All right, let's lightning round our way through the rest of these. You guys will just hit me with an over, an under. Only expand on that if you feel very, very strongly. Dan says the Charlotte Hornets will finish in offensive efficiency. And he sets the line at 9.5.
You block, so, boy.
Will they be in the top 9 in offensive efficiency?
No.
Okay.
No. You don't think the Hornets can be a top 10 offense?
They can be. Will they be? I'm shaking
Hater.
My head for our
pessimism.
Our listeners.
Audio medium. You need to say what you're saying.
I'm very pessimistic about the Charlotte Hornets. I think they have pieces, but no. I mean, Steve Clifford is a defensive-minded coach, sir. But I don't want to keep – I want to keep some more thoughts private as to why I'm not so optimistic there.
Fair enough. I will, just in the interest of being a contrarian and disagreeing with you, which is one of my favorite things to do, I'm going to take the take the under here. When they last had both LaMelo Ball and Miles Bridges, they finished 6th in points scored per possession. Since then, you add Mark Williams, you add Nick Richards. They've got a couple of rollers. There's more shooting. I think there's a really good chance that LaMelo Ball has a huge bounce back season, and they might be terrible on defense. They might not be a good team overall, but they were a 40 plus win team with a top 6 offense the last time we saw LaMelo healthy. So there you go. That's my optimistic take there.
All right.
Shout out James Borrego.
Speaking of blog boys and the things they like to blog about, points per game for Los Angeles Lakers guard Austin Reeves. 19.
You're calling Austin Reaves a blog boy?
No, I'm saying the blog boys like to blog about him. He's good for
19
SEO.
And a half is a lot of points.
It's
for
a
Austin
lot of
Reaves.
Points.
It's a lot of points for Austin Reaves. He's clearly capable. He's got the skill. I think there's a lot of mouths to feed on that offense. Even if, you know, he's the big three. He is the third best player on the Lakers. There's still D'Angelo's going to be getting him up. Rui's going to be getting up. I mean, I'm saying the under. I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the under too, but I think the case is a lot closer than you might be given a credit for. After the All-Star break, Reaves averaged 17.6. As a starter after the All-Star break, 18.3, still 16.9 in the playoffs. So he's around that 17, 18 yeah. points a game before. And that's like as he's getting sort of fully integrated in. He's only, you know, only been like a higher usage piece basically since the All-Star break. And even that, under 20% his usage rate. I think that's going to go up. They're going to put the ball in his hands and let him run point more often this season. I think there's a chance. Yeah, I would hope so too. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that having the ball in his hands with like D'Angelo spacing or Gabe Vincent spacing gives them maybe the, you know, the better, you know, ecosystem in the half court. And I think they're going to lean on him. I mean, quiet as it's kept, like the Lakers have not been a very good offensive team pretty much the entire time that LeBron's been there.
But they have Cam Reddish and Christian Wood now.
I will believe that Cam Reddish and Christian Wood are going to play important roles when I see it. I think they're scratch off tickets, and they, you know, they are good at the price point that they came. They're worthwhile gambles, but we've also kind of been waiting for that to happen for a little bit, and it really hasn't worked out on teams of consequence, and the Lakers want to be one of those. I think you're absolutely right to point to, if Reeves is the number three, he needs to be the number three guy. Like they're putting him in position to do that. And whether or not he can kind of go one of two ways. It's either more shot heavy or more distribution heavy. I think there's a chance it leans shot heavy. And if that happens with his shooting efficiency, I think 20 is not impossible. So I'm with you on the under, but I think it's going to be close.
Yeah. He has every tool in the bag to do it. We'll see if he has the opportunity to use that toolkit.
Okay. There's a few more left, but we're running long. So one word answers for the rest of this. Total combined appearances for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Dan sets the line at 109.5. So your over would be 110 games between the two of them. Under would be 109 games between the two of them. Jake, go first. One word answer.
Over. Easy.
Dan?
I need more than one word.
You can have 10.
Under, they've never played 110 together in a season.
Wow.
Fantastic. Wonderfully done. What a stat. I love it. All right. Oklahoma City seed in the Western Conference. Dan set the line at 6.5. So the question is, are they a playoff team or are they a play-in team? Dan, you go first this time.
Play. I'm going to go over. So they are going to fit. It's between 7 and 10. And I can't say more things.
I'm just going to say that this was also a question or a prompt that I was going to put, but I didn't want them to be so basketball-y. So it's funny that we had another thought. I'm saying under, I think the Thunder have a shot at hosting a first round playoff series this year. So,
oh, I like that a lot. I need more words. Give me more words.
No, we're moving on. No! All right. We have three more. First one, teams Pascal Siakam plays for this season set at 1.5. So the question
one and
is,
a half.
1.5. Will he play for the Toronto Raptors from the beginning to the end of the season, or will he join a second team during the season? Jake, you can have several words, but not many.
Guessing anything the Toronto Raptors are going to do is incredibly challenging.
That's right. It's not my money. I'm not gambling with mine on this.
They have not done the trade. They have not sold their guys. Dating back to Kyle Lowry, until they prove me otherwise, I'm taking the under. They wouldn't trade OG Anunoby to get Damian Lillard. I don't know what's going to, I know all the contract stuff's weird. I'm taking the under. I will believe they trade Pascal Siakam when I see it.
Yeah, I'll go under. I feel like at this point, Masai Ujiri is just trolling everybody who writes about the NBA or talks about it, because we have all the discussion about where the guys are going and what their next path is, and he just doesn't choose one. So yeah. Stays there all season and everybody's miserable.
All right. I'm saving Jake's last one as a palate cleanser after this, because I hate this one.
Okay.
Total number of instances where DeAndre Ayton refers to himself as Dominatin. The line is set at 36.5. That's a really high line, I think.
It's a really low line to me. I'm taking the over because the correct answer is infinity. He seems to say it every other sentence. And you know what? For someone who got battered and bruised emotionally by the team that drafted him and basically said, you're not good enough to be here anymore, I'm happy for him that he's finding new life with this nickname and this alter ego and this identity. So keep saying it, Dominate. And I believe in you. Portland believes in you. Let's get it done. Let's become the top five center that the Blazers think you are.
Spoken like somebody who's trying to get a profile written. I feel like I love that. I love that idea. I'm taking the over too. I set that line before I did much research. I already found 3 video clips of him saying it since he got there for the first day of like at the facility. So I was thinking like once every other game, if he plays 70 games, he's already at 3 or 4 before he's even touched the court. So yeah, the line might need to triple.
We'll see if that shows up on Vegas boards or if they pull it off because it's too easy. Last one, and I'm going to put in my own input on this. Over under 2.5 games that Taylor Swift attends. I'm personally, personally taking the over. I think she's turning herself into the queen of all sports. And once the NFL has, she's done with them. So January, February, Super Bowl, I think she's going straight into attending Knicks games, Nets games, maybe even a Lakers game. Jake, this is your question. Over, under, 2.5 games.
So she's been at 2 NFL games so far.
Yep.
There's only 16 games in an NFL regular season. 17 games, excuse me, in an NFL regular season. There's 82 for every single team. There's, you know, quite literally thousands. Right? Thousands? No. Hundreds? Let's just go with hundreds. I think there's thousands. Thousands of...
There's more than 1,000 games in the season, yeah.
Yeah. So not thousands, but over 1,000. She's going to show up to 3. I'm calling it. Over. Taylor Swift. She's going to be bouncing that orange ball. And maybe we'll even get another... You know, maybe her and Travis flame out and she starts dating an NBA player. Who's to say? Who's to say?
I'm going to go over to... No, you know what? I'm zagging. I'm going to go under because Taylor Swift, I'm looking at Getty Images right now. There's a number of pictures of Taylor Swift in the front row and celebrity row at Knicks games, but they're mostly from a number of years ago. Like I see Sonics jerseys, like the Knicks are playing the Sonics in some of these
but
games.
But she loves sports now.
Right. But Robert Swift was on the court when she was there last time. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're coming back. I'm not saying that she's like tied to the Sonics, but I think it's been a long time since she was like, I'm going to show up at NBA games. She's now like bigger than the NBA. The NFL is kind of like the only thing that's analogous in size to her at this point and Beyonce. So I'm going to go under because I feel like she doesn't need it. She doesn't need it. I don't know, maybe. And also we're keeping hope alive and optimism. I like to believe that when love blooms, it lasts. So I'm going to say no breakups in the course of the season. Travis Kelce gets a longer runway there, and maybe they find some happiness, and she doesn't have to go shopping anywhere else for new bows and new entertainment.
Okay, thank you guys. Thank you for letting me be a part of No Cap Room today. This is how I am going to hand the reins of the steering wheel back over to Jake, which is we do actually have one more and it relates to the next topic. So I will give you guys the over under. I will walk away and Jake will walk us through the last couple of topics that we're going to hit on.
This is production right here. This is professional grade production.
Yes. Jason Tatum's finish in the MVP voting. Dan has it at 3.5. So if you believe he'll be top 3 in MVP voting, I guess that would be the under. Or if you believe he'll be 4th or lower, that would be the over. Jake, I hand the reins back to you.
I'm taking the over because the Drew Holiday acquisition, I think, will hurt his cause in the narrative of it all. That he's not just like Drew's impact, his influence, the Kristaps Porzingis edition. I think it could hurt work. And against his cause, his claim to being the guy who is lifting that team.
I'm going under. And the reason is it's a sort of a similar reason for what you just said. I think Dame coming in hurts Giannis more than Drew coming in hurts Tatum. And everything that has happened around this hurts Embiid. And Jokic might be headed for another MVP just as like a little bit of a makeup for him not getting it last year and then winning the championship and finals MVP. This might be the way, like how Giannis got, you know, sort of re-elevated back or whatever. But Tatum doesn't have to finish ahead of all of them. He has to finish ahead of one of them because last year he finished 4th. 2 years ago, he finished 6th. He's been on an upward trajectory there. I think the Celtics are going to win a ton of games. I don't think... Yeah, I think the setup there is like the other guys get lowered and he doesn't get lowered as much of that and then winds up elevating there. But so I think there's an opportunity to be seen there in terms of him rising up that rankings. But he also might wind up getting, you know, bushwhacked a little bit by somebody else jumping up because as we're about to talk about, like the MVP odds are kind of, it's interesting what that list looks like right now.
Yeah, last year, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander finished 5th in MVP voting after not appearing high up in the preseason MVP odds at all.
Right.
This year, he's 8th. The top 9 are Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Giannis, Embiid, Tatum, KD, Steph Curry, Shea, Devin Booker. So if last year's preseason odds kind of indicate what could happen this year, who is a player that you believe will finish top five that isn't part of the current odds?
Okay, so you know what? I'm not going to be a coward. I'm just going to keep going. I looked at it a little bit less as like, this guy is going to do it, as more as like, what's the bet that I would want to make in this context? Mm-hmm. And give me Zion Williamson going off at 40-1.
I thought you were going to say that.
So here's my argument. He was an absolute monster for the first half of last season. It was 26-7 and a little under 5 on 61% shooting. The Pelicans were top 5 in net rating. They were a game behind Denver for the number one seed at the beginning of January. And then on the MVP ladders and stuff, NBA.com's rankings, they had him all around like 5, 6, 7. So he's in that neighborhood. Then he gets hurt. He misses the last 45 games of the season. All we talk about is how Zion can't stay healthy, yada, yada, yada. All of the stuff coming out of Pelicans camp, and obviously it's big weekend, hope springs eternal, is he brought in
medical. Hope springing eternal in New Orleans right now.
I mean, listen, that's the hope that kills you, but it's also what you have to hang on to. All the reporting about like he brought in medical experts to evaluate his body. He's like done David Griffin saying it's the first summer where we've seen him take his profession seriously, like guys like Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum, and invest in it off the court. Like they overhauled their medical team. Like the entire approach is geared at getting him on the court more often. And his commentary to reporters at Media Day was, quote, there's a lot of greatness within this organization, but I'm not going to sit up here and talk about it too much. We just have to show y'all. Now, obviously, whatever everybody says at Media Day, you take with a grain of salt. But if you are getting a motivated Zion who can produce like he's like an MVP candidate, like he did last at the beginning of last season, and they actually make progress in keeping him on the floor, that's the only thing separating him from top five, as far as I'm concerned, is just him getting on the floor. So I'm getting 40-1, I think that's a worthwhile gamble to me.
I don't know what his odds are. I'm not a degenerate like you, but. The name that is interesting, and the reverse of what you and I said earlier, what about Damian Lillard? What if the change of scenery sparks him into season-leading scoring averages, and the Bucks march back to the one seed, and he's got a lot of narrative sales for Wynn to just flow into of new chapter, little bit burnt, by how things went down with Portland. Miami didn't step up to the plate and make something happen. Giannis is the best teammate he's ever been on. This is the best team he's ever been on. The greatest chance to win a title. What if all that is a perfect storm and this guy goes out and scores like 36 a game and looks like he's tapping into the fountain of youth that he got a couple of drinks from last season when he had a career best season. He'll be healthy. He's rested up that calf injury that sat him out the last 10 games. And I don't know. That's the type of stuff that I think gets into the voters' hearts and minds that maybe could get some momentum going. We'll find out.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining it's going to get lodged deep enough in our hearts to make us forget that Giannis is on his team. But it's possible. It's possible.
What if he makes Giannis better than Giannis has ever been before?
And then Giannis is going to win his third MVP. Lillard at this point is going off at 30-1 at BetMGM. So you can write down, I think it's like 11th or 12th, right next to Donovan Mitchell. So if you see value there, go with God. I think there's a reason that another guy on his team is much, much higher up that list.
So last thing for today, in a similar vein, the Denver Nuggets claimed the 2023 World Championship. NBA championship.
Don't call it a world championship. There was a whole thing this summer.
I have the reference, yes. So they were not in the top seven of last year's preseason favorites. The Denver Nuggets were not in the top seven of last year's preseason favorites. The Celtics were the only one on that list of the Warriors, Bucks, Nets, Clippers, Suns, Sixers to even make a conference final. Of course, Boston did not advance to the championship where Denver won. So if history were to repeat itself, which of this year's top seven favorites to win the championship will be able to make it to at least a conference final, which the teams are about to rattle off, Dan, If only one of these teams makes the conference finals, that'd be a catastrophe for plenty of folks. So we've got Boston again, Denver, Phoenix, Bucks, the Warriors, the Lakers, and the Heat. Which one of these seven teams are you most confident will be the one to make it at least to a conference final?
Yeah, it's chalky, but I would say Boston. I mean, they've made it to the Eastern Conference Finals five of the last seven seasons, including the last two. If I had to bank on the superstar core guys, I think, you know, Tatum and Brown just being younger and more, missing less games on average than, you know, Giannis, Dame, and Middleton, or the, you know, the Phoenix guys. You know, you made the joke last time we talked where it's like when one of the Suns wings takes a couple of weeks off, like, you know, that's when you're going to have a little bit of a harder time with that roster. The Lakers are older. The Warriors are older. Miami, you know, obviously it's very much TBD what they, if they do anything else to add around Jimmy and Bam, but they were a 44 win team before they started hitting all their threes. Like they've proven themselves in the postseason. But if you're asking me like which I would feel most comfortable betting on, the only other one that I wrestled with was Denver, just because I think the case for them, they obviously proved very significantly the case for them this past postseason, but there's the combination of like championship hangover, and they're like a really a top six heavy team. You know, where do they go in terms of like how hard do they go the regular season? How quick do they get off? I mean, what kind of start do they get off to, all that kind of stuff? So if I had to bet on one of those things, I think I would take Boston. But what about you?
I'm going Denver. Very chalky in that respect too. But that little video that came out the other day of them pinging the ball around, Malone had the starters playing against the rookies. They're going to miss Bruce Brown. They are. Bruce Brown was phenomenal. He was a super integral part to what that team was doing. There's a lot of optimism in Denver that Christian Brown can be that significant type of replacement. He already had major postseason minutes last year as a rookie, and he didn't dominate. He didn't dominate, but he held his own, and he was a true valuable rotation piece of Michael Malone's postseason rotation. There's expectations about Peyton Watson maybe being able to do some things out of UCLA. Colin Gillespie's back. Who's to say? I just think that top unit, especially now, I saw it before they even got to the title when I was covering that second round series against Phoenix. Denver has a swagger to them that they don't really... you don't see too often around the league. It's teams that go out and expect to win. They expect that they are going to have every counterpunch imaginable to whatever they could be facing, because they've got this guy who can take the ball from the rim and go anywhere on the court and pass, shoot, or score. And they've got Jamal Murray, who's always had a chip on his shoulder. And when someone asked him at media day, would he rather be like, does he think this is the year to make his first all-star team? He said, I'd rather be a champion than an all-star. That type of, he's got that type of shit to him that I just think, you know, a summer of somboring with Aaron Gordon, those two guys being more and more best friends, and Michael Porter Jr. has another year to mature and grow and what have you. Continuity is a real added weapon, I think, in this league where we're seeing Dame get traded and Drew get traded and this and that and all this changeover happening all the time. I'm buying Denver, not changing anything because it ain't broken, that type of thing. And them kind of marching back their way to the conference finals for sure. I really do.
I'll give you a quick point counterpoint and then we get out of here. One is, and this is a plug for a big column I wrote earlier this week, the reintroduction to the title race, where we talked about each of those top six teams. Sorry, Miami, you didn't make the cut on that one. It was everybody who had odds of 15-1 or better. And the case against starts here is that recent history hasn't been particularly kind to defending champions. Last 20 years, only three teams have gone back to back. And that's the Kobe Powell Lakers, the Big Three Heat, and the KD Warriors. Now, for the purposes of this conversation, this question, they don't have to win. They don't have to actually go back to back. They just have to get to the final four. But even so, the point, larger point being, consecutive 100 game seasons with the amount of strain that puts on, especially a team that's as top heavy and as reliant on its starting five as Denver is, it's an awfully tough thing to ask. The counterpoint to that is I mean, Jokic is on, this is, he has established himself on the level of an all-timer like Kobe was there, like those KD and Steph Warriors, like where LeBron was at the point of his apex in Miami. You know, if Jokic is that dude, and he certainly appears to be, then maybe that neutralizes pretty much everything else. And as long as you've got him right, you've got the opportunity to get there.
They also cakewalked their way to the one seed last year and really felt very little resistance on their way to the finals as well. So we'll see. That stat is from another day. This is a new day. This is a new season. And this was another episode of No Cap Room on the Ball Don't Lie Podcast Network. We appreciate you joining as always. We appreciate John Gennaro for doing all the things he does to make the show look and sound great. And he sounded great himself today, being our MC of our alternate over and unders. Follow us on various social media platforms that still exist. My handle is at Jake L. Fisher. That is at Your Man Divine. Please subscribe to Ballin' Out Live on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you are currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review. That would be so lovely. We thank you for listening again, and we'd appreciate it if you came back next week for another episode of No Cap Room.